From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour will be made in July. That's next month now, when a local woman will take her first steps into a brand new home. Renee Hagens is a mom, an aunt, grandmother, and when she's given the keys to her new home on Parcells Avenue, it'll be the first time she has ever owned a home. Right now, the home's still in the construction stage. As of last week, it just had two bathtubs and a front porch. But as WXXI's Tiana Magnon reported for us, that doesn't keep Hagens from stopping by often to check out the progress there. And the home was once what you might hear of as a zombie property. That's a term, by the way, which we will probably avoid. In a moment, we'll explain why. But it's part of a pilot program run by Flower City Habitat for Humanity and the City of Rochester. The goal is to reduce the number of so-called zombie homes in the city. According to a report released last summer, there were about 600 such homes around Monroe County, which contributed to more than $11 million lost in property value. But the new program goes beyond just the numbers. It's giving families a fresh start. And organizers say they hope it will build up neighborhoods, create more jobs, reduce poverty in Rochester. This hour, we'll talk about the program and how it's impacting local families with our guests. First of all, Renee Hagens is here.
Hi, how are you?
It's great. I'm wonderful, and I don't know if I'm doing as well as you are.
Oh, I'm excited.
Though you're going to be even doing better next month when you're moving.
Absolutely.
In.
I'm so excited to move. I'm ready.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being here to share your story.
Thank you.
Also here is Myesha Wesson, who is also a homeowner.
Hello.
Thank you. Nice to have you here. Thank you for
inviting me.
And you got it. And Matt Flanagan is president and CEO of Flower City Habitat for Humanity. Are you getting used to smiles like this? Is that what's going on with these programs?
I never tire of those smiles, Evan. I never tire of those.
Great stories here, but we want to talk about the process here because, you know, you're going to hear throughout the hour of a situation that we've been reporting on for years now in Rochester, Monroe County, and listeners know them as zombie homes, zombie properties. That's not our preferred term. Matt, you prefer what?
We like the words vacant and abandoned. Maybe not so harsh, but still they're an issue, and that's why we like to take care of those, right? Vacant and abandoned.
And this is certainly not the first time that whether it's a government agency or an agency like Habitat has tried to step in and say, what are we going to do about these properties? There have been debates about taking them down, putting grass over them. There have been debates about refurbishing where you can. There are talks about, you know, use for helping people who are homeless. Matt, when did the conversation happen with the City of Rochester, and how did that kind of roll out?
It was end of the year, around December, when the mayor in 2016, when Mayor Lovely Warren requested that I would come and meet with her. And some of my staff and some of her staff got together, and she really was talking about just what a burden these vacant and abandons are in a community, and especially in the City of Rochester. But they're everywhere. They really are. And so she wanted us to put together a pilot program where she would offer some grant dollars and some support of her team, helped us to acquire the properties. We had a wonderful relationship with the zoning department. They come and walk through with us, so there's no surprises. We both sides know what we want to accomplish early on. We get some drawings and we go to town. And we're really fortunate, Evan, with the army of volunteers that we have. And that's really why we're well poised to take this on, because we have a competitive advantage financially, because we have such a great team of volunteers. So we can do these in a cost-efficient manner.
Yeah, Habitat's become one of these icons of the community, kind of a timeless icon now. You hear a lot of people volunteering, wanting to help out. How big is the program in general? How many houses? What's kind of the year schedule for Habitat?
Thank you. This year, we'll accomplish 14 new builds or significant renovations of our homes. And we're poised. We're looking, if we really kind of connect all the dots, next year we may hit 20. We probably will come in closer to 18, but we're looking to get to 20. We're still growing, and I see that number to continue to go up for a couple of years until we plateau. But the need is so great. And this community is so generous. So we have a tremendous need, and we have generosity. So we're well poised to keep growing.
With donations and with volunteers as well, in terms of actually doing the builds?
Correct. We're always looking for volunteers. We're always
trying to get
that.
You mean with the modern regulatory system, people are allowed just to come volunteer and pick up a hammer?
Isn't that amazing?
Well, I mean, just sort of being cheeky here, but I found out last Thanksgiving when my then 5-year-old and I wanted to volunteer in local soup kitchens and organizations helping provide meals. Right. There's a lot of rules on who can serve food and who can't and who needs to be trained and who can't. And we had to figure that out. So what about Habitat? How does that work for us?
Well, we have the same rules. We can't allow people of a certain age to climb ladders or use power tools, as you would imagine. Yeah. And we have to meet the same requirements from zoning. So our electrical inspections are just as valid as anyone else's. But it may take us a little longer because we're working with volunteers, but they're trained, or same with plumbing or whatever. What we are moving a little bit to these days is a little bit more where we'll shop out a little bit some of the high-skilled work or our roofing, siding. We'll try and keep our volunteers more on the ground, that kind of work. But yeah, we can do it. And we meet the same regulations as any for-profit builder.
All right. So before we continue, for those listeners saying, how do we get in contact? If you ever want to volunteer, you know someone who wants to do it. How do you do it?
You go to our webpage at flowercityhabitat.org or rochesterhabitat.org and look for volunteering. And they'll connect with a wonderful young gentleman, Ken Braley, and Ken will walk them through the whole process.
Now, as we look around Rochester, Monroe County, there are plenty of properties that are vacant and abandoned. And you know, if you're going to do, I think originally the city said, how about 5? You guys did 7?
Right. We'll get to 7 next year. We'll hit our 7th.
Okay. And, you know, that's 7 out of hundreds. So you got to make decisions on, I don't know if it's where the most need is or, you know, how that process works. Can you walk me through how you're making that decision?
Sure. And I'll also start with why we chose such a small number. And you kind of allude to it already is, you know, we want the right quality.
Sure.
So we didn't want to take a big number and have a shock and awe number, but not hit the quality. So we said, we'll grow this the right way. And I would love to see us get up to maybe 10 zombies a year, vacant and abandoned in the future. So we work with the land bank. They're a wonderful group of folks that will help direct us towards what houses are available or what they anticipate may become available. So we can start doing our research. And once the house is available, we'll have zeroed in on a couple of different neighborhoods for a lot of different variables that we look for. We try to separate from where we're doing all our new builds and help out other neighborhoods with the vacants. We'll look at a couple other key factors. We look for things such as, you might be surprised, but is there access to busing? Is there access to food? Is there access to the other amenities that somebody needs to live in a neighborhood that maybe doesn't have transportation or some of the other resources? So we look at a wide array of variables before we zero in on which house we want to take on.
Okay. Is it your decision?
Ultimately,
yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And I imagine as you do more of these, you may have communities calling you saying, or neighbors calling. Did that ever happen where neighbors say, look, our street's doing pretty well, but this would be a great one. You know, can you come take a look?
We haven't gotten there yet because we work more with the city. But
okay.
Where we are working now with our first donation from a bank. M&T is working with us to donate a house that they have back on their ledger. Mm-hmm. And it's advantageous for them. It's advantageous for us. And they've been wonderful to work with. So we're breaking into that market a little bit as well.
You will say no. You know, what are the main reasons you look at a property and say, can't do that one yet, or this isn't a fit?
Well, we look at environmentals like lead and asbestos.
Yeah.
You expect to see some of that. So that's another one that we hire out. There's no volunteers that we work with work on lead and asbestos, of course. But we'll look at that, the general condition of the house, depending on what it is that we're looking to do. Right now, we're taking houses that need a pretty robust flip, if you will, but we haven't gotten into anything like if there was a fire or any other kind of substantive damage. So the shell is in pretty good shape when we take it on. The inside might be pretty tired.
All right. So, Renee, can we talk about your story?
Sure.
This is a great example. And Matt, when did you first meet Renee?
Boy, we go back a good year and a half, but it feels longer. Because once you know Renee. And I feel like I've known her a really long time, and I love it.
Yeah.
How do folks like Renee, Maisha, how do they sort of end up with this opportunity, Matt?
So folks will come in or give us a call. They'll hear to these kinds of initiatives and come on in and talk about wanting to get a house. And we'll first put them in our program, which is really transformative. We'll focus on things like financial literacy, home maintenance, insurance, those kinds of things that you need to thrive in the house. It's not just about handing over a set of keys. It's making sure that people are going to thrive, because when that takes hold, it's a whole different story. And that's what I think you're going to hear in just a moment.
All right, Renee, so when did you first think about this as an opportunity?
It was about 2 years ago when I heard about the Habitat program. And I got an application and filled it out, and they said I was approved. And I came in, and it was like just a great start. I was like, okay, yay, I get to do all these programs and learning and money management. Yeah. And I learned so much being in all the classes and programs, and you meet so many different people.
Well, hold on. Let's not jump ahead too much.
Oh, okay.
I want to understand your story a little bit.
Okay.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up right here in Rochester.
Right here in Rochester.
Right here in Rochester. Mother and father lived on the west side. But, you know, growing up, just been renting, you know, wasn't the same as, you know, wasn't thinking about owning a home. And then all of a sudden one day I was like, you know what, I deserve a home for my kids, you know. So I was like, it's just one of those things that you just want to get into. And I just been going ever since.
You wanted that for,
I wanted
for your family?
For my family, yes.
Did you think, though, that it was realistic and possible?
Not at first, no, because, you know, you go through these other programs and they always be like, oh, you make too much, or, you know, it seemed like it was a dead end. And then when I got to the Habitat program where they're willing to work with you and it's a process, so I thought it was more interesting.
So they might say you make too much to qualify for additional help?
Oh, additional help,
okay.
Yes.
So you might be in a position where, I don't know what you have to say, but you might say, I can't buy a house on my own, but I'm out of the qualification
right.
for certain help.
Exactly. And so when I came across Habitat, it was like they worked with me and walked me through the program of, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go through classes. We're going to teach you how to be in a house, own a home, home ownership. You know, do the whole program and make sure that you're going to be in this house. We've got a 30-year, not only be in the house, but a family. Mm-hmm. So we're like, we it seems like a family because I've been going there every day. So it's like, it's a family-oriented place. So
where, it's on Parcells?
On Parcells, yes.
Okay. And right now, I think I mentioned my understanding from Tiana Mignon's reporting recently is that, you know, it's still a lot to be done there. What's it look like now?
Oh, it's almost there. The outside is done. It's just a few things got to be done in the inside. Like, I think we're waiting for the insulation to go up, and then after the insulation, the drywall, and then I'll be moving.
Do you find yourself just saying, well, I'm going to go over to Parcells today?
I go over to Parcells every day. I ride by there every day, take pictures. I'm so excited. Every day, I ride by there, take pictures. Oh, they did this today. Oh, they did that today. So I'm so excited.
Your friends at Habitat sent some advance notes on this, and they said they said that you are sort of a hub for your family, that, you know,
yes.
You take care, obviously, of your kids, but there are a lot of people who you help out.
Yes,
tell me about that.
My nephew, I took them in because my brother couldn't take care, you know, care for them. So I took them in as well. And, you know, I raised my kids. My kids are grown, but I still figure, like, you know, they needed a home as well. So I can't see them on the street. So I was like, okay, they need to be, you know, with family. So I took them in and keep it going. Yes.
I mean, you have a real, honestly, I'm not sort of being patronized or anything, just you have such a bounce in your step and a vitality. But you're someone who's got a big responsibility to your family.
Absolutely.
I mean, does
Absolutely.
It wear on you? Is it tough?
No, it's not. You know, through God, you can do anything. And then, like I said, working with the program and with the people in the program, it's great. And, you know, anytime you feel like you have a problem, all you got to do is go to them and ask them about anything and everything. And, you know, they're willing to work with you.
What did you find yourself learning the most that you felt like, you know, you went into this process not knowing much about?
Money management. And that was a key thing going through. We went through, what's his name?
Dave Ramsey's
Financial Peace. Yeah, that is the main thing that I didn't think I can, you know, do. But going through his program, I learned a lot. So, like, putting money away because, like you said, when you own a home, this is now mine, and I can't just call my landlord to fix it. I have to do it myself. So, to put money aside for any emergency that's going to happen. So, I'm, like, super ready.
And have you, you feel now like you've come a long way that absolutely. When you move in, you know, you're going to hit the ground running?
I am going to hit the ground running. I am so excited. I'm like, yay.
Who's helping you move? I mean,
probably my son. Okay. I'll probably call family members then.
I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's a remarkable story. And Matt, you know, she's talking about a lot of support. Right. And a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. So going forward, if Renee's got a question on, you know, this payment or how this works, what kind of support is there ongoing after the move-in process?
We have an entire department called Family Services, and they're there to help support. We're all there to help support any kind of question through the mortgage process, through the mortgage management process. Folks show up at the house and have questions, we're there for them. So our phones are pretty busy at our office between folks wanting to get into the program, folks who are already in a house have a question, and then folks who want to help volunteer. So a busy phone is a wonderful thing in my world.
Okay. And Renee, once you're in, what are your priorities? I mean, you feel like you're pretty well ready to get into the house, then?
I am ready to get into the house. I have been ready, but I am ready. Yes, I'm so super ready. It's like, okay, yay. I'm ready.
How does it change your mentality as someone who's going to be owning their own home?
Oh, it's a big responsibility versus renting and owning. So now I own this, and this is ownership. And, you know, I think it's more of a release of pressure. I'm like, I'm going to be in my own home. So it's like more excitement than it is anything.
I'm trying to remember, producer Megan Mack, that's where 441 is, right? Is that right? 441 Ministries? Some of the food, there's New City Cafe, which is one of the really great coffee shops in the city.
Oh,
is there.
Right down the street, yes.
There's a lot happening.
Yes, over there.
At Parcells.
Yes.
And some of the nicest people there.
The people, yes.
Have you met any of your neighbors?
I did. When we did a news channel, the mayor was supposed to come speak, mm-hmm. and there were so many neighbors that came out to meet me, and they were like, oh, I watched the house for you. I can't wait till you move in. We're going to have barbecues. I was like, okay. I'm so ready.
That's fantastic. And we are definitely a world, Renee, where more of us, I think fewer of us know our neighbors.
You know? Right.
More of us are sort of insulated. You're insulated in a lot of ways, whether it's, you know, kids being on screens
and not going outside.
And adults, too.
I press them to go outside. And I can't wait to sit on the front porch. That's what I'm... Because we don't have a front porch where I live. So that's why I was like, I ride by, oh, I got a front porch. I'm going to sit on it every day.
This reminds me exactly of the conversation we had with... it's the Landmark Society, Megan Mack, right? The Landmark Society, they always do their five to revive. They pick five. Usually it's properties, businesses, landmarks that need help and emphasis. But one of their five to revive for the last year is the front porch.
The front porch,
the notion
yes.
that community really can happen when we spend some time, when we wave to our neighbors, when we walk over and,
absolutely.
And you know,
yes.
have a drink with a neighbor.
Yes.
Of any variety, whatever your preference is.
Absolutely.
You're going to be that kind of person?
Okay, yes, because I already said it. And I'm going to invite my Habitat family, for a big barbecue. As soon as I get in the house, I'm like, oh, we're going to have a big barbecue. I got a big backyard, so I can't wait.
It's great stuff, Renee.
Thank you.
And well, good luck. It's moving in next month now.
Yes.
That feels good to say
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely.
It's next
yes,
month.
Yes, next month, yes.
I'm going to turn to Maisha Wesson. And Maisha, why don't you take me back a little bit and tell me, first of all, where you're from?
I'm from the west side of town also. I'm from Magnolia Street, where I grew up. I got a house in the Josiana area with my daughters. I have a 10-year-old and a 9-month, two little girls.
10-year-old and a 9-month?
Yes.
Wow. How's the 9-month-old doing?
She's good.
I met both of them.
She's
we always want to have babies.
She's good. She's good, man. She's teeth, man. She's trying to take a little couple steps. She'll be one in August, so we're enjoying her.
That's great. It's a wild time, isn't it?
It is. It's a big gap, but it's fun.
It is a big gap for you. It's like learning all over again.
It truly is. She's different from my oldest one.
Yeah, my brother had that gap, and he said, it's amazing. It's like you forget everything after a certain point.
Yeah.
You have to restart.
I'm restarting over.
Restarting. Yeah. And tell me about home for you.
Home for me, I moved in my house in December 2012. So this Christmas, it'll be 6 years coming for me and my daughter.
And how's it going?
Oh, everything is great, man. It's quiet over there. The area has turned around. I have a huge backyard, so I also have all the get-togethers most of the time and barbecues. But for the most part, it's been a great thing for me to get into the program. From moving out of a house, I lived in an apartment that had got broken into twice, to moving into my own home where it's just stability. I ain't got to worry about moving no more. My girls got somewhere they can grow up, call home.
And when you say the neighborhood's kind of turned around,
yes,
in many ways, what comes to mind first for you, for what has changed?
The activity. We all know the old Brown Street. And now they got more homeowners over there, so it's quiet. You know, when you got renters, people who are moving in and out a lot. But when you start getting homeowners, and my neighbors are also Habitat for Humanity homeowners, we're like a family, man. I talk to my neighbor across the street, and it just, turn around because it's quiet from back when I was growing up in that area.
But quiet in the way that, the activity that you did here, was it negative activity?
It was negative activity back in the days, but now it's, like I said, with the houses being built, it's everything has slowed down. No more drug activity much, okay. And you know, things like that.
Yeah, because I imagine, especially as summer comes, if you hear the voices of kids laughing and playing at 9 o'clock at night, that's different than other kinds
of
activity.
Exactly.
Okay, and you really link home ownership as being a really key factor in that.
Yes.
Okay, that's very interesting. And you also find that when you have more homeowners, you get to know more people on the street because there's less in and out?
Right. When you got homeowners, that's people that's signed a paper saying, hey, I'm planning to stay here for this many years. I'm going to take care of my place. I'm going to do all these things. And when you got renters, I feel like they really don't care because it's not my place. We could tear it up. We're going to find somewhere else to go. So when you got a group or they remodeling or rebuilding a whole neighborhood or a whole strip, then you got people that care about their neighborhood, that care about the kids that surround the neighborhood. So, the activity slows down.
Yeah, and you also own your own business?
I do also own my own business. I own Maisha Enterprise. And right now I'm doing some small repair work for Habitat for Humanity. I'm a homeowner, but they subcontracted me. So, yeah, I got some good things going, man.
What's the kind of work that you do?
We're doing interior, exterior painting. I do debris removal, site prep work, site cleanup. I'm a pipe fitter myself. Mm-hmm. That's my skill trade. So I do minor plumbing. And we do a little bit of it all.
I should say. Matt, you want to attest to
that? She really does. She's a blessing to us. There's no question about it. Because, a lot of our homeowners over the years, we've been around for 32 years, so some of our homes have gotten a little tired. So it's wonderful when someone calls. You asked earlier if someone calls, and I said we have services. So someone will call and say, this isn't right or that isn't right. Now we have somebody that we can go and send over. And she'll check and see, well, maybe we didn't do something right the first time, so she'll take care of it. Maybe the homeowner didn't do something right afterwards, then we'll work that out too.
Okay. And how often are you doing Habitat work then, Maisha?
I'm pretty Monday through Friday.
Pretty regular with them,
yeah,
then?
Yeah, pretty regular with them.
That's a great setup.
It's an awesome setup.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for now, we're going to lose you. Soon, you got some other work coming.
I got a couple other gigs going right now. Some of my guys are working out on a RIT campus. We're demoing like 100 apartments out there at the Racquet Club. And I got a couple guys that was on Hudson and Upper Falls. I was subcontracting for MGM installation. So, yeah, we got some things going. Things are picking up.
Well, I'm glad to hear things are going well for
you
as well here. A couple of great success stories that you're hearing from Maisha Wesson and Renee Hagans. Matt Flanagan is the president and CEO of Flower City Habitat for Humanity. And we're having a conversation about the work that they're doing, not just making sure we've got homes and people have opportunities to be in homes, but also some of the homes targeted are what you might call, or call in the past, we hope, zombie homes, but we're calling them vacant and abandoned properties. And we know they're all around Rochester and Monroe County. The question is, what do you do with them? Well, the city of Rochester came to Habitat back in December of 2016, had a conversation about, you know, finding the properties that might be good fits, and they've been doing that. They're on their way to doing six or seven houses by next year. They're going to try to do more in the future. So you're hearing how they make those decisions, who is impacted, the benefits of home ownership. And after our only break of the hour, which we'll take now, we're going to come back and talk about a couple of different things. They're working on workforce development. We'll talk more about workforce development. And I want to talk about some of the, I don't know if stereotype is the right word, but there is some skepticism about home ownership. And I'm sure, you know, Maisha and Renee have a lot to say about this, about not just benefits of home ownership, but making sure that when someone ends up in a home, owning a home, that can they afford it? Can it be a long-term fit? I think it's very different than what caused a real crisis in this country just more than a decade ago. But there's still some skepticism about home ownership. Do we push it too much? What are the benefits? Obviously, you're hearing some of the benefits from our guests, but we'll talk more about that with them when we come back after our only break of the hour on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections. There has been a lot of talk about what the Trump administration has done regarding energy policy, coal, nuclear plants, fossil fuels, and more. But a climatologist recently raised a concern. If we truly wanted to kind of get rid of fossil fuels and get serious about it, it would be a lot harder than she thinks. We're talking about oil addiction Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we continue the discussion on some of the more, I guess, the more serious parts, I want to ask both of the women who are in studio what's on their summer bucket list. Some people like to say, you know, you don't want to get to June, and we're in June now. You don't want to get to June and think, you know what I'd love to do this summer in the neighborhood? You know, you mentioned a barbecue, things like that. But we always say you want to do it, and then you get to like middle of September and be like, I didn't do anything that I wanted to do this summer, or I didn't get half the things done, or I wanted to have a friend over and I wanted to do a cookout. What's on your, you're going to be a homeowner next month, Renee.
Next month. And what's on your summer bucket list? My birthday is in August, so I definitely going to do a couple of cookouts.
There you go.
I'm definitely going to do it. I'm thinking about it. I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it.
Oh, yes.
Is that top of the list for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Other than moving in. Moving in and
getting settled?
Yes, getting settled. I'm like, it seems like I'm already settled. I'm like placing stuff in the room. I'm not even there yet. So I'm there, like, yay.
And my issue for you, again, you've also talked about the importance of neighborliness. When you think about, you don't want to get to September and look back at the summer and say, you know what we didn't do in this neighborhood?
Oh, for me, man, I always got to have a pool party. I have a pool at my house. She didn't get open yet this weekend, but we're planning on opening the weekend coming. Got to have a pool party. All my family come over, cook out. My daughter loves to swim. So my bucket list thing to do is make sure I have a huge pool party.
I don't want to like bring you down, but the last couple of days it would have been really good for a pool.
I know. It was scorching outside. I work construction.
Chilly by comparison. This week. No, I know you're working.
I work construction, so I've been working outside. Definitely been hot.
It has been hot. It's got to be hard for the work that you do when it gets 92 degrees and humid.
Oh, yeah. Just got to take breaks and drink plenty of water.
Maisha Weston and Renee Hagans, Matt Flanagan from Flower City Habitat for Humanity in studio with us here. Let's talk about the importance of home ownership. And Matt, you know, I think this country had a bit of a conversation a decade ago about that for different reasons than maybe we'll talk about now. I mean, I think there are very valid questions about what happened in the aughts when it came to the ownership society. I think President George W. Bush had a very sincere goal and well-founded and understandably so to say the more people who own, the better. Mm-hmm. The question became, what were the instruments and the path to doing that? And obviously, it was a complex picture among private institutions and lenders and government, but it didn't really work out so well. And we saw some of the results of that. Now, some of the cynics or the critics pulled back from that and said, we're too focused on home ownership, that was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take it?
Well, I think there's good arguments on both sides of the coin. I think home ownership is critical for a good number of our community members. But I don't think home ownership is for everybody, and I certainly have come to understand that. So that's difficult. So part of our program is to help vet that. We only build 10 to 20 houses a year. then we want to make sure that we find the right 10 to 20 families that get in there, because it's not for everybody. There's a lot of work. Growing up in a family that owned their own home, you know, I didn't really realize until I got into the housing market just how big of a project it really is, just really everything that goes into it, from the smallest little noise that you forget to pay attention to. Later on, you have a drip, and now you have a big problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's validity to it. I think what's important from where I sit is we look to vet who's going to go in the house. I'll, again, harken back to one of the questions you asked about requirements and the laws. We're also a mortgage banker. So we have to meet the same origination laws and mortgage management laws as all the other banks. And we do that by working with our partner banks. That's how we get there. So one of the things I look at are, what are the numbers tell me? In the typical two-bedroom apartment in Rochester, last I looked, was almost $1,000 a month, over $900 a month.
Yeah.
Our mortgages, all in between the principal payment to us, the taxes to the county and to the city, and the insurances, all three of those together stay under $700 a month. So it's less expensive to live in one of our houses than a typical two-bedroom apartment. But as you heard Renee talk about, as you heard Maisha talk about, we have to save some of those dollars for the rainy days that we know will come. But ultimately, if you manage it well, living in a Habitat house, which is 1,400 square feet on average, is certainly less expensive on a month-to-month basis than the typical two-bedroom apartment.
And can I just ask before we continue on this, it's so true, you know, you think about how expensive housing has become in this community. That's not to say that you can't get, quote unquote, a lot of house for your money. And I know that there's probably a whole separate discussion as we look vis-a-vis other markets. But it feels like in the rental markets and in when we look at housing, I mean, right now it's a seller's market. It didn't feel like it that long ago that under 700 all in for everything wasn't that uncommon. And it feels very uncommon now. And I don't think it's just inflation. I mean, it feels like it's kind of really gone up on a steep curve.
There's a steep curve. And that's happening in the rental as well. And that's happening locally. And it's certainly happening nationally.
Does that concern you?
Absolutely. You know, the best practice for any of us, anyone listening to this radio station today, would want to hit the same measure of keeping your housing costs under 30% of your gross monthly income. We all want that. And that's what we do at Habitat. We make sure we hit those numbers. And even if we can't sell the house at its full appraised value, we won't go over that 30% to start somebody out. That's how we start the ladder of success. But that is not what's going on in America today. Many of the studies I read see housing creeping up over to 50% of somebody's gross income. So that means they're making decisions now about food, medicine, transportation. Other things have to go when housing tips you over.
Yeah, and that's a very dangerous situation. And you can see why you end up with either defaults or, you know, really sort of precarious situations. Obviously, Habitat aims to be very different. And when you talk about the vetting process, I mean, how many people want to be in these houses?
We probably have about a 3-to-1, maybe a 4-to-1 ratio for the folks that come in the door and first start asking to the ones who make it all the way through the program. The sweat equity process is not for the faint of heart. The average person will put in at least 300 hours of sweat equity. That's the classes that Renee has talked about, the financial piece, the insurances, all of those things, maintenance programs we're heading towards next. That takes a lot of work. And then they go out in the field and actually work in the house. Or if somebody's not physically able to build on their site, we'll still work with them. And we certainly have those stories. And we'll allow them to work in our ReStore or some other mechanism. And in some cases, go work for another nonprofit. As long as you're giving back to the community, that's a win for us as well. So we'll work with anybody who wants that house regardless. Our vision is we see a place where everybody has a decent place to live. Everybody. So that's a pretty inclusive list, right? So if somebody's physically disabled, we'll work with them as well. But it takes a lot of work.
300 hours, and do you have some people who don't make it through that program?
We do.
Yeah.
We do. Because they also have to, along the way, we work with them on a case-by-case and figure out what's the right ratio and rate by which they're going to put down their money for a down payment. It's maybe a lower threshold than a conventional mortgage would have, but there's still a percentage base that says you have to have that for your down payment. So as somebody gets their hours to a certain level, they put their down payment to a certain level, and they put in all the classes to a certain level, then they get to start making selections. And that's sometimes where people will fall out.
Okay. What's been the hardest part, Renee?
I don't think I had any hard parts.
It doesn't sound like you did.
I don't think I had any hard parts. I enjoyed every minute of every class. So, you know, you just make the best out of it.
You've enjoyed learning.
It's a privilege to me and an honor to get in one of these houses. So I've been, like, working at the ReStore, volunteering. I'm going to my classes. I'm like, 100% in.
Okay.
I'm all in.
And when you're out there, have you done any work on the property itself?
No, not on my property. Okay. No, I'm one of those disabled. Yeah. Yeah, she has. Yeah, I'm disabled, so I couldn't physically do any
physically
of that.
Do the work.
Yeah,
yeah, but Maisha could probably do pretty much all of it.
We do it all. Matt just hit something. He said 300 hours. When I went through the program, it was 450. You couldn't even.
They've streamlined a little, maybe.
Right, you couldn't even pick a lot without. You had to put in 250 hours first before you can even go through and pick a lot for your own home. You had to put in 250 hours of working at somebody else's house. Then you went through the whole thing of picking your own lot. Then you got to put 200 hours in of working on your own home. So when I left work every day, I went to my house and put in an hour if I can get it in or whatever it was.
What was the kind of work you were doing at
that
time?
Oh, man, we put up the trusses for the roof. I painted. I dug the trenches for my basement. I really like putting hand and footwork to build my house.
Now, when you were going through that process, how did you feel about the place that it was going to become? How did you feel about the neighborhood? How did you feel about the opportunity?
Man, I picked the place. I got the hugest backyard, let y'all know. No, I picked the place, and it was cool, man. I know I was looking forward to something for me and my daughter. It was going to be our own house, so it was no complaints. I'm a construction worker, so it was nothing for me.
Sure. And how has she liked it?
Oh, my daughter loves our house. Nobody lived there before but us. She knows that, so she got that in her mind. Like, we got a new house, Mommy.
She was aware even at the time. She would have been
About she was three-ish
three
at the time. Four. Yeah. She was turning four when we moved in, and she just had a birthday last week. She's 10.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's real pride.
That is.
You know, for
I
a child,
literally
for the neighborhood,
say,
for the house. Yeah.
I built it with my hands and feet.
What was the hardest part for you then? Not the physical work.
Not the physical
work. Was there any part that was, you know, maybe that you learned the most in as you went through the process?
I did. Going through the process and being there now, you do have to pay your bills. It's the financial part. Like, a lot of people think, oh, I'm getting a Habitat house. They think it's an easy thing. We pay our bills. It's not a handout. It's a hand up. You got to take care of your bills. You got to go through the process. You just can't think you about to go to Habitat, fill out an application and get an apartment or a house, or it doesn't work that way. You do got to go through the work.
Have you thought about, you know, some of the idea that, well, you know, what's the right, you know, sort of mix of homeowners versus people who are renting and maybe rent for life? Did you think about, you know, it's not going to be me. If I own this house, this is going to be my house.
Yes.
I'm going to stay here.
Yeah, well, owning a house, we all know, is like an American dream. Everybody, when you're a child, say, I'm going to have a family, some kids, and a house. I did that. So it feels good. My daughter has a place to go. They have a place to stay. They're stable. She get a bus there and back every day. We ain't worried about nothing. We're homeowners, and we're there to stay.
That's right.
That's a great story. How do you feel about it, Renee?
I'm with her 100%. And me and my niece, we ride by there, like I say, take pictures every day. She's like, oh, we're going to have sleepovers. We are? So, yeah, she's excited. She's like, she's 16. So, you know, she's, like I said, we ride by there every day. And she goes to School of the Arts. So, and we got a whole piano. I got to move in there. So, you know, yay.
That's a good problem to have, though.
Oh,
Renee.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we've talked about neighborliness and the value of having more homeowners on a street where you feel like you can look at that house and say, that's who lives there, as opposed to 6 months, it's this person,
right,
and then for 3 months, and then a year.
Right,
yes.
And Do we have any responsibility, do you think, to reach out to neighbors? Because some people are more private. Some people are more like, you know, Renee, you apparently want to have a cookout every
other
day.
Oh, yeah. I was walking down the street. Yeah, I was like, hey, how you doing? You know, I'm going to live here. I already been doing that. So, yeah, like I said, the neighbors, some of them came down and met me. So I was like, oh, we're going to have cookouts. I'm going to bring you brownies. All right. I'm going to be waiting for them brownies. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing to reach out to your neighbors to know, you know, to be looking out, who's looking out for your house.
Sure.
Right.
And that's what one of the ladies was saying. I'll be watching to make sure nobody touches your stuff. I was like, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I ride by there every day, but I do appreciate her watching out. She's like, it's good. Neighbors are good. I was like, okay, thank you for letting me know, but I'll be finding out shortly because I'll be there.
Yeah. And for me, when you're owning a house, the neighbors are everything. You got to know your neighbors because they're building these houses, these neighborhoods to build the neighborhood back up from being abandoned and vacant homes. So when you knowing your neighbors and like you said, you go out of town and say, hey, you know, I want you to look out. You got to look out for each other in your neighborhood. You got to have neighbors that you could talk to and say, you know, I'm going to do this. My daughter's out there. Can I run to the corner store?
Right.
It's just you got to be cool with your neighbors.
That's great. So let me ask Matt a little bit about workforce development, because we talked about Maisha and the work she's doing, not only as a Habitat owner, but for Habitat. Tell me more about workforce development and the ethos with Habitat.
Right. That's another obviously important part of home ownership is being able to have the income to pay for that house. So we recognize workforce development in the city is an important component for us as well as our entire community. So we have a couple different options that we're working with. We've met Maisha, and you see where we've been able to hire one of our own homeowners to do our general contracting work for us and help support her as she launches her construction career, which is an honor to be a part of something like that. We have two youth programs with Urban League and Catholic Charities, where they're being mentored and coached and taught offline, and then they'll come and use our actual construction sites as a live construction classroom, so to speak. And then this year we started a new initiative. We've done one pass through, so one does not a trend make, but it looks pretty good. We partnered with RCCI, Rochester Careers and Construction Institute. And RCCI does the heavy lift. They go out and recruit the students and train them on OSHA, on power safety tools, on math skills needed for construction, soft labor skills, specific skills, etc. Then they'll come out again and use one of our houses as a live classroom. But what we're doing with RCCI is we're kind of identifying a house at a time as quote-unquote their house. So it's one that they take it from whatever stage they start until the end of their program financially. So they go to the same house every day and learn those skills. We may pull them off that house from time to time because we're maybe doing something on one of our construction sites that is a skill that they want to learn. So for example, in the first class, when they were doing the carpentry and electrical work, we had some flat work, pouring concrete on sidewalks and driveways, and that was something they wanted to learn. So we were able to roll them over and let them do some of that work so they had that experience as well. So the first class with RCCI, we had 12 students, and 9 of those passed successfully and are now working as a pre-apprentice level in one of the unions in town. 9 success stories.
Great story. By the way, before I get to a couple of emails from listeners, if you want to learn more, get online. Website for Habitat?
FlowerCityHabitat.org.
FlowerCityHabitat.org. Paul in Rochester is an architect. He says, years ago I pitched this idea to Habitat for exactly the reasons being promoted today, especially training young people in the neighborhood new skills that then they could take ownership and see that it stays safe and clean. But I was told the issue was having volunteers working in a lead-contaminated environment. Today you are addressing the lead issue by hiring outside contractors. Can you engage some young people through the Lead Safe Practices training program to get certified, including being a supervisor, and then they can eventually go on to owning their own companies? I understand volunteers, like most of us, shouldn't be working with lead, although I did get certified, he says. But that's from Paul.
We're always looking to chase down a new lead. I wasn't there probably when that first one came through. But
he says
he wants to contact
Bill Bartlett, he says.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I remember Bill.
Bill was our construction manager.
Yep.
Good man. But yes, lead, obviously, we don't want anybody untrained working with lead and or asbestos. That's why we bid that out.
Okay. And Sam emailed the program and said he joined the conversation late, and he wanted to know how many of the vacant and abandoned, and I'm editing his email, he's zombie properties, but again, we're using the term vacant and abandoned properties. He wanted to know how many would be in condition of renovation. So let's do this. Let's back it up for Sam's email, and I'll ask Matt to explain again. When Habitat, Flower City Habitat, and the City of Rochester, and really Flower City Habitat, decides to target a property, mm-hmm. are you renovating? Are you starting new? Tell Sam the process. You started late here.
Right. So we build some new spots on vacant land that's already been vacated.
Already been vacated.
And already been backfilled, and there's grass growing. So we'll build a new build on those.
Yep. So Sam, they're not taking existing...
No, we do that as well. So we also now take vacant houses where the shell is in good shape, and we'll take those, and we call them full gut zombie rehabs back in the office. So we'll go into a house where the shell is in good shape. We'll completely gut it after it's been remediated for lead and asbestos, completely gut the house, throw out all the surprises. If you watch HGTV, you always see all the surprises.
Yeah, sure.
We take care of those. We put them in the dumpster the first week.
Okay.
Then we work with an architect engineer to make sure the house is structurally sound once we've got it down to bones. And then we go ahead, and that's the kind of house that Renee will be moving into. What we look for generally to the question that your writer is asking about is how we select it. I'll put a little more meat on that bone. We're looking for a house approximately 1,400 square feet, single, not attached, that's going to be an owner-occupant. So it's not also got a storefront attached to it or anything like that.
Not
so
a
that
duplex, narrows, not an apartment.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
So that narrows the field a little bit from, you know, the amount of vacant properties in the total area to very specific to the size that we're looking for. But so, yes, we do handle the lead. We handle the asbestos professionally. We gut the house. We're looking for about that size. And we're looking in those cases, because these are one-offs, we're looking for relatively stable neighborhoods.
Rachel writes to us to say, I've volunteered for a few of the Ontario County builds, and I highly recommend it. It's a great feeling to know you're helping a deserving family get their own place, and often you get to work with not only the future homeowner, but other dedicated folks as well, and big plus, you improve your own skill set. That comes from Rachel.
That's fantastic. Rachel, I'm sure my friend Nash would say thank you for volunteering out in Ontario County as
well. So for your volunteers, what's the average amount of time that someone's going to spend working on a single property then?
Great question. We have two levels of volunteers, if you will.
Okay.
Folks that come out for a day, and they might come out for a day now and then, a day a year, a day maybe less frequent. Then we also have a number of volunteers we call hammer and saw. And the hammer and saw are volunteers that come out on a very regular basis. They might give me every Wednesday or every Thursday until a grandchild kind of interrupts that. So they might give me 30 a year, let's say. But generally speaking, we work from 8 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, give or take. So the typical volunteer will give us about a 7-hour day.
Wow. Okay. So online, if you want to learn more, and they're always looking for volunteers. I think I missed one other point of Sam's email. He was asking how many of the current vacant and abandoned properties that we know of are in condition to be renovated, even if it's a full gut?
That's a great question.
It's probably a hard one to answer.
It's a very hard one to answer. I'm on the Monroe County Vacant and Abandoned Task Force, and we just had a press conference today, and that question was asked there as well. I'll give the same answer. It's very hard to know what the total girth of vacants are, because it's not public information always. Sometimes it's held by the bank for appropriate reasons, or the homeowner who has left that doesn't want that information disclosed. That can be a little damaging. So we don't know, and it's a moving target, but we do know that the land bank will get a certain number a year, and then we'll parse out of that maybe 100. We'll parse out of that those 1,400 square foot that meet our requirements.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you a question that you're going to really thank me for asking this after the program, but I think it's fair, and I think you can handle it because you're a diplomatic guy. Okay, so you're on the task force,
right,
which is through what office?
Adam Bello.
Yeah, so that's the county clerk's office.
Right.
And the county clerk, the county executive has talked about vacant properties, and right now we just happen to be at a time in this community where anything Cheryl Donolfo does. Adam Bello seems to counter, and it's sort of the worst-kept secret that he's likely to run as a Democrat for county executive, though I don't think I'm breaking any news. He's not officially running, but everyone assumes he will. Can we address this problem without it becoming politicized? I mean, in other words, and I think Cheryl Donolfo and Adam Bello are both very sincere about this, but do you fear any politicization, or do you think that this issue of housing, of a vacant and abandoned, can be handled without it becoming politicized?
I think a political overlay is always going to be a part of our culture in this country we live in today. But I think Adam is well poised to make an impact, and I'm thrilled to see Monroe County is entering and has been there for a while for sure. Cheryl is a sincere person, and I'm excited to see what it is that they're looking to do over in the Market View Heights area, believe. And I'd be happy to work with her on any initiatives that she has going as well.
Okay. See, you're such a diplomat. I knew I could ask you that. So before we lose the hour here, real briefly, what's the future for this program at Habitat? In 3 to 5 years, what do you expect this program to be doing?
Boy, in 3 to 5 years, I would love to see us in 10-plus houses a year that are
10-plus per year
of the vacants and continue our good work on the new build as well. This city needs more quality housing for those who are qualified to thrive in that house.
All right, Renee, most of the hour here we've been talking about these remarkable stories, people like you. You're about to become a homeowner for the first time.
Yes.
What do you envision for day one? What do you think it's going to be like?
Day one.
I mean day one without any boxes, without any moving. I mean day one where you get to wake up and nothing else to do. I mean, there's always something to do. Maisha will tell you.
Definitely.
I'll probably just do nothing. Probably walk around the house and be like, this is mine, yay. I'll celebrate myself.
Take a walk around the neighborhood.
Take a walk around the neighborhood, yeah. Like I said, I ride through there every day. I'll probably walk up through the neighborhood, meet some neighbors, like, I live here.
Well, I hope you enjoy it next month when you finally get to do that. Maisha, do you remember your first day when you finally?
Of course, man. They had all the news channels there. They rushed me from work and said, hey, we need you to get over here now. Bring your daughter. I said, what do they want me to bring Trinity for? And they had a big Christmas tree up and they gave me my keys. So I will never forget my first move-in day.
Well, cool. I know it means a lot here. So, yay. And Matt, it probably means a lot to you to hear these stories.
It really does. And Evan, I want to share a little bit. I'd like experiential.
You got about 30 seconds.
30
keep
seconds.
It tight.
To the folks listening.
Yeah.
If you own your own house and you go out for a sidewalk walk and you get to turn left off that driveway into your yard, how powerful is that? If you don't own a home, you don't get to make that turn. So hopefully more people will help us make this happen.
That's great stuff. Online one more time, Matt.
FlowerCityHabitat.org, RochesterHabitat.org.
Thanks for taking the time to share the program. Great way to end the week. It's always nice to see you.
Thank you, my friend.
Matt Flanagan is the president and CEO of Flower City Habitat for Humanity. Maisha Wesson, continued success in your business and your home. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you so much.
And Renee Hagans, one of the happiest people you'll meet in Rochester.
Yay.
Good luck next month with the move-in.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being
nice
here.
Nice to meet you.
John Andrus is the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you've enjoyed the week here. Have a lovely weekend. We're back with you Monday on Member Support. Public Radio.